historicengland.org.uk/disability history. About the Disability in Time and Place Project. For as long as English society has existed, people with disabilities have been a part of it. They have shaped and influenced its landscapes and buildings, just as its landscapes and buildings have influenced and shaped them. Disability in Time and Place is an attempt to tell part of this particular story of England. Watch highlights of the Disability in Time and Place launch at the Gree Theatre, December 2012 at https://www.youtube.com/watch?v=8puzei8yee& fe8ue&emb_imp_wo_yt. From Leper Houses to Disability Rights. Our journey begins with the hundreds of leper houses which peppered the medieval landscape, a sophisticated institutional response to the devastating disabling consequences of the disease. It ends with the closure of the last asylums and the campaigns of the disability rights movements of the late 20th and early 21st centuries. Throughout, we show how some of the buildings and landscapes recorded in English Heritage's collections, lists and archives, have been influential and important in the history of disability. Disability in Time and Place is divided into 6 chronological sections. In each section there is a general historical account of disability during the period, accompanied by 4 features that show how and where people with disabilities lived, whether in special buildings or in their communities. We also try to understand what it meant to be a disabled person at different times, the many ways in which people understood and reacted to disability and how disabled people saw themselves. We examine how these changes influenced, and were influenced by building construction and design. A legislative and historical timeline places these events in their wider historical context. Language and terminology. Any historical account of disability must grapple with the problem of language and terminology. Words used to describe different types of disability at different times can sound highly offensive to modern ears. They reflect the attitudes of their time, but they also reflect the changes which take place in the meanings of words. Words such as lunatic, idiot, defective, moron, cripple, leper, imbecile, and cretin were all once widely used public terms for different types of disability. Over time, their meaning has changed in popular speech to abusive and degrading usage. To retain historical accuracy, these words have been used in the context of their time, but always in inverted commas to indicate that their use is no longer acceptable. Contributors to the project. We have worked with a steering group of disabled people, disability historians, and many external advisors for this project. Disability in Time and Place is not a definitive or comprehensive history of disability, nor does it suggest that this history is only about buildings. It does offer an introduction to this important part of the story of England and tells a little-known social history of some well-known buildings. The history of disability is intimately connected with local history. We hope that people will be inspired to visit the buildings described and, most of all, that some will undertake their own research in this important historical field. Access to buildings featured in these pages. Please note, many buildings featured in Disability in Time and Place do not offer public access and can only be viewed from the street.
For access information, please see the document at https://historicengland.org.uk/content/docs/research/building-access-disability-history-pdf.
Author. Disability in Time and Place was written by Simon Jarrett for English Heritage. He is a member of the Social History of Learning Disability Research Group based at the Open University and a postgraduate student in the History of Ideas at Birkbeck College. His special interest is the social history of disability in the pre-asylum era, particularly the 18th century. Contact Simon here, simonj@jarr.demon.co.uk. Separation or inclusion? The debate continues. This section continues the debate surrounding the separation or inclusion of disabled people in society, and describes some of the radical communities that have tried out different ways of living. In the history of people with disabilities, buildings have often been a focus for controversy. Some people viewed the asylums of the 19th century as places of safety for vulnerable people. Others at the time, and since, have seen them as places of incarceration designed to isolate people from society, Convenient places for inconvenient people, as one historian described them. In the 18th century, public opinion on madhouses diverged. Some people saw them as humane places where people suffering from mental illness might recover, whereas others thought they were abusive institutions where unwanted family members were locked away. Today, the debate about separation or inclusion goes on. Do some disabled children need separate special schools, or should all children be part of mainstream education? Do people with disabilities need to use specially adapted buildings, such as day centers, or should all buildings be fully accessible and integrated with no need for separation? Should people with disabilities have the opportunity to work in sheltered work settings, or should it be the norm that everyone can work in mainstream open employment? The special village community. During the 20th century, a very distinctive example of separate living emerged. The special village, where people with disabilities lived apart from the rest of society in a specially created community. These are sometimes known as intentional communities because people only lived in them if they had chosen to, and expressed a considered wish to do so. These communities see themselves as distinct from institutions, such as asylums, because they base themselves on family and community life. Inhabitants live simple lifestyles in a self-enclosed, self-supporting group. They belong to the tradition of the commune that has existed in English society since the radical religious sects of the mid-17th century, and which included the diggers. Communes flourished again briefly during the hippie revolution of the 1960s and 70s. Internationally, the kibbutz in Israel and the Anabaptist communities of North America, Amish, Moravian and Hutterite, which originated in 17th century Germany, are examples of the separate, self-sustaining community. Enham al-Amein. A village for heroes. An early example of an English village community is Enham al-Amein near Andover in Hampshire. Built in 1918 as the Enham Village Centre, it was the first specially created village for the care and support of disabled servicemen returning from the First World War. It was intended for men unable to return to their former trades because of their disabling injuries, and it focused on supporting them to regain independence and earn a living wage. Crucially, servicemen were allowed to bring their families with them when they moved in, creating a genuine community in rural surroundings. The people who lived in the cluster of houses were known as settlers. The village contained craft workshops and a poultry farm, as well as facilities for book and shoe repairs, furniture making and upholstery. With its own woodworking factory and market garden, it aimed for as high a level of economic independence as possible. Fulfilling industrial orders during the Second World War, including the manufacture of gliders, brought Enham to its highest level of self-sustainability. After the Second World War, with a new generation of disabled war veterans to house, Enham was boosted by a financial gift expressing the gratitude of the Egyptian people in commemoration of the Battle of El Alamein. The village was renamed Enham al-Amein and new purpose-built cottages and flats were added in the 1940s and 1950s. New industries were introduced, such as candle making. Enham al-Amein survives today as a community providing housing and work training for people with disabilities. Camp Hill communities, seeking the hidden and eternal soul. The origin of the Camp Hill communities is extraordinary. The first Camp Hill school was founded in 1940 in Aberdeen by a group of German and Austrian Jewish refugees from Nazism. Led by the inspirational pediatrician Karl Koenig, a Christian convert, they wanted to create a new form of healing environment for the education and upbringing of children with special needs. Following the teachings of the social reformer and educational philosopher Rudolf Steiner, they rejected the fashionable idea of the time that some children were uneducable. They envisaged a community where children with disabilities and unpaid staff would live together and share their lives to foster mutual help and understanding. They believed that in each human being, there was a hidden and eternal soul that had to be reached. Simplicity and naturalness. The movement flourished and the first English community was built at Botton Village in North Yorkshire in 1956. Today there are 22 communities in England for both children and adults. Influenced by the Moravian Christian communities of North America, villagers, also known as Camp Hillers, live as co-workers in non-hierarchical communities. Family-sized groups live together in small houses. Mostly set in the countryside, the communities produce high-quality handcrafted goods and foods and sustain themselves with their own produce. Some villages have gift shops and cafes. Their cooperative businesses include agriculture, horticulture, cheesemaking, pottery and woodcraft. Key elements of the movement are simplicity, naturalness, tranquility and respect for the natural rhythms of life. Villagers come together in a central village hall to celebrate Christian festivals, changes in the seasons and the rhythms of the farming year. Buildings are simple and use as many natural materials as possible. Camp Hill is now an international movement, operating in 23 countries. Social refugees. Towards the end of his life, Karl Koenig recalled what it was that created this unlikely alliance of exiled European Jewish intellectuals and British children with disabilities. Why did they come together in their own special community outside mainstream society? The handicapped children, at that time, were in a similar position to ours. They were refugees from a society which did not want to accept them as part of their community. We were political, these children social, refugees. The shifting borderlands of disability. This section describes how the idea of a disability has shifted continuously over the centuries, and how social attitudes and institutional responses to people with disabilities have changed significantly during that time. Although it would seem a straightforward matter to recognize or define the idea of a disability, it has changed continuously over the centuries. People seen as disabled, by society or by themselves, have varied significantly over time. The implications of being disabled have also changed over the years and will undoubtedly continue to do so. Currently, several types of disability have almost disappeared from our society or can be treated as a disease or illness to reduce their disabling consequences. Leprosy, for example, is no longer commonplace in English society. Polio caused widespread disability in England for much of the 20th century, but has now been eradicated by vaccination. Ophthalmia, which caused the blindness that affected Edward Rushton, founder of the first English blind school in Liverpool in 1791, is now treatable. However, while some disabilities or disabling conditions have disappeared, other new ones have emerged. Autism, for example, only surfaced after the Second World War. Sometimes political and social attitudes shape what is seen as a disability. In the first half of the 20th century, the idea of the moral imbecile was invented. Some disabled activists argue that disability is just a political idea anyway. In their opinion, the problem is society's attitude towards people who are considered different. The shifting borderlands of disability can be a complicated matter. Leprosy, a disappearing disability. Today, leprosy is not considered a disabling condition. Known as Hansen's disease, it is still prevalent in some parts of the world, but is no longer highly infectious when treated. With treatment, its disabling consequences can be avoided, and patients do not need to be isolated. When leprosy reached its peak in medieval England, it was society's single most disabling condition. It resulted in the first big institutional response to disability. More than 300 leper houses or lazar houses were built across the country. At the end of the 14th century, for no apparent reason, leprosy declined. One theory is that it was supplanted by the plague. The leper houses were no longer needed. Some fell into disuse, while others were remodeled. St. John's Hospital in Canterbury, for example, became an almshouse. However, leper houses had laid the foundations for later institutional responses to disability such as the almshouses, the madhouse, the workhouse and the asylum. Possibly the best example of the diverse history of disability is the 12th century leper hospital of St. Mary Magdalene in Sprowston, near Norwich. Built for male lepers, it became a home for poor, aged and sick men after leprosy receded. Today, the same building is used for employment and personal development activities by people with learning disabilities. The building was intended for people with leprosy, but they are no longer a disabled group in our society. In the medieval period, the people with learning disabilities who now use the building would not have been seen as a disabled group needing special provision. They would simply have lived and worked in their families and communities. Each age has its own idea of disability. Autism, a newly identified disability. The condition of autism was identified towards the end of the Second World War by a psychiatrist and a psychologist working independently of each other. The American Leo Kanner, 1894-1981, and the Austrian Hans Asperger, 1906-1980, after whom Asperger's syndrome was named. The relatively recent identification of this disorder raises interesting questions for historians of disability. Has autism always been with us, or is it a recent phenomenon? There are, of course, no historic buildings associated with autism, given that it had never been a named disability. But some historians and psychiatrists have looked for evidence of autism in the past. In 1799, for example, a 5-year-old boy at the Bethlehem Hospital was described in a case study. He never engaged with other children or became attached to them, but played in an absorbed, isolated way with toy soldiers. Is this the first formally recorded clinical case of autism in England? Others have examined the life and work of some famous historical figures and speculated that they may have been autistic. The great scientist Sir Isaac Newton, 1642-1727, was described as having a rigorously logical mind, an inability to form intimate friendships, and numerous eccentric behaviors. John Howard, about 1726-1790, the great 18th-century penal reformer, traveled 60,000 miles over 17 years visiting prisons in Britain and Europe, meticulously recording and reporting everything he saw. His solitary lifestyle, his intense focus on one special interest, and his extreme obsession with punctuality have led some to believe that he may have had Asperger's syndrome. Lewis Carroll, 1832-1898, the pen name of the Reverend Charles Lutwidge Dodgson, the author of Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, 1865, was known to have had difficulty with social interaction, narrow obsessive interests, odd speech, and compulsive orderliness. However, using modern criteria to diagnose historical figures can only result in guesswork. What we do know is that when Newton, Howard, and Carroll were alive, they were probably just seen as eccentric rather than as having any sort of disability or condition. They were simply valued for their extraordinary talents. The idea of moral deficiency, a socially created disability. The Mental Deficiency Act of 1913 invented a whole new category of disabled person. The moral imbecile. At this time, supporters of eugenics were arguing that defective members of the population would cause a general deterioration of the racial stock unless they were kept strictly controlled and segregated, and sterilized if possible. They were not only referring to people who had an intellectual or physical disability, but also to those who represented a moral threat to society. These were only to be found, the eugenicists believed, in the lower orders of society and could include habitual petty criminals, alcoholics, prostitutes, and unmarried mothers. The meaning of moral imbecile was never made entirely clear, even when it was changed to a moral defective in 1927. It was widely understood to mean someone who appeared not to know the difference between right and wrong. It also included people whose behavior did not seem to conform to the moral values of mainstream society. As a result, many people with no sort of intellectual disability found themselves living in the new network of mental deficiency colonies that grew up around the country. Many lived there until they died, or only emerged in their old age. The category of moral defective survived until 1959. Disability in this case was nothing to do with the shape of a person's body or their intellectual capacity. It was about how someone thought and behaved. Once more, the boundaries had shifted. They will move again. Disability is not a fixed idea, it changes over time and place.